The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Market View on Money FM 89.3.
You're on Money FM 89.3, and it's not been the brightest of starts to the trading week, with most markets across the Asia-Pacific region trending downwards and naturally losing ground. It could be these renewed COVID-19 infections that are starting to concern markets, especially with new outbreaks in countries like India and the Philippines. But we have a little bit to deal with. We've got a lot of GDP data coming out from both China and Singapore, and also recent comments from Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on CBS, where he said that the U.S. economy may be at an inflection point. Today on Money FM 89.3, we're pleased to be joined by Jeffrey Haley, Senior Market Analyst for Owanda. He's here to help us kick off the new trading week and to tell us what might have the markets a bit stung this Monday afternoon. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are well and in good health out in Jakarta, Indonesia. And good morning.
And good afternoon from Indonesia. Always a pleasure, JP.
The day moves so fast, I've forgotten that morning is bled into the afternoon, sir. But anyway, as we mentioned, it is going to be a rather busy week in Asia. But we have to start off, of course, with Fed Chair Jerome Powell's comments that the U.S. economy may be at an inflection point. On one hand, he says that more jobs are being created and probably at a quicker pace than he expected. But then he also did mention that the virus is still going to be the moment of truth. Infections rather than inflation will be the problem. Could this be what's keeping markets a bit apprehensive until we get a clearer sign of where the world's largest economy may or may not cross the Rubicon?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. And I think it's a very fair point when you look at it from an international perspective. And we saw that Asian equities last week just didn't buy into the exuberant rallies that we saw in Wall Street last week. In fact, they were a lot more cautious, and clearly they're very cautious today. And part of that, I believe, is the trajectory of COVID-19 across the world. So Chairman Powell does make a very valid point about COVID-19 being the great unknown as far as the economic recovery goes, not just for the US, but for the world in general. And when we look around and read the news and see what's going on across Asia, we see Thailand, South Korea, India, of course, as well, South Korea, they're all suffering a new wave of COVID-19. Extrapolate that to other parts of the world, such as LATAM, Latin America, Europe, obviously. COVID-19 hasn't gone away, and it still has the potential to delay the reopening of the world economy and thus the global recovery.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing also that COVID-19 has really done and that needs to be repaired also is the massive number of jobs that have been lost across the world. And while everybody seems to be worried about inflation, central banks from the Fed to the EU and to the ECB and other major central banks of the world have continued to say, nope, it's about jobs. We've got to create jobs. And this has to be our focus for the most part. Do you think they might have it right, though? And should markets take more cheer from the fact from that rather than potential inflationary upticks? Should the fact that the policy makers are so focused on restoring jobs actually be a sign of comfort and confidence?
Yes, and in this respect, I believe that they've learned from their past mistakes, tightening policy too soon before the actual underlying economy had recovered. In the United States' case, there's still 10 million Americans less in employment now than before COVID-19, and the Federal Reserve have been very vociferous about emphasizing this point, and that is one of their mantras, employment. It's one of the things, their KPIs, if you like. This is very much the same mantra that is being repeated around the world. It's easy for us to sit in the financial markets and see stock markets at record highs and PPI numbers moving higher than expected without realizing that there's still a lot of hurt out there in the underlying economy. As far as inflation goes, though, a lot of this is down to logistics blockages. It's down to clearly some recovering consumption around the world and also supply shortages, particularly in semiconductors, rising energy prices as well. But this is transient inflation, and it feeds into the CPI numbers for a year and then drops out. So I believe this is why central banks are comfortable with it. It's not the sticky wage price inflation that hollows out an economy over time. This is inflation that will pass in due course, and I can't disagree with him on that fact.
Absolutely. And okay, taking that into account, we do know that for the region, it's going to be a rather big week in terms of macro data. On one hand, you do have China releasing their first quarter GDP numbers this coming Friday. But before that, we have Singapore also releasing the advanced estimate of their first quarter GDP print. As a market analyst, Jeff, what are you looking out for in terms of how either might influence or perhaps coax markets to move in either direction? And do you think that perhaps we're seeing markets move a little cautiously before the release of these two significant GDP prints?
Yes, and actually we also have US CPI out this evening, or sorry, tomorrow night as well, I believe, and that will be a very major number as well after the PPI outperformance at the end of last week. You know, I think China, the risk there is that the story doesn't actually match the hype, and that GDP doesn't reach the heady heights that are expected on an annual basis, because China has clearly led the world out of this COVID-19 recession over the course of 2020, and that could weigh on equity markets towards the end of the week if it disappoints. It's also bookended with retail sales and industrial production at the same time, so it's a chunky set of data. You know, as far as Singapore goes, I think there's potential there for an upside surprise, to be honest. Singapore's electronic exports have been firing on all cylinders. We know the stories that are going on in the world with the semiconductor shortage. I think there's potential for upside there. There's potential in the upside for its oil export side of the equation as well. So I believe that there's quite a high chance that we're going to see GDP outperform. Not enough to move the MAS from neutral policy, but I think it could be enough to lift Singapore equities in the midweek.
All right. And as we know, Singapore equities have been sort of stuck and questioning themselves below, just underneath that 3,200 level. We're speaking to Jeffrey Haley, senior market analyst at Awanda, here on Money FM 89.3 about his outlook for the markets moving forward. But Jeff, I do want to get your commentary on an uptick in terms of possible listings of the ASEAN region's notable unicorns. We did get news last week that Grab might be actually finalizing a possible route to the New York listing in the U.S. via an SPAC or SPAC. We do have Traveloka also reporting that they're also looking at a possible listing out there. Can you care to comment as to why some of these unicorns might be exploring a listing out in the United States and what that might say for whether or not it's a vote of confidence for the health of U.S. markets vis-a-vis, say, ASEAN markets at the moment?
I think it all comes down to dollars and cents, to be honest, JP. The valuations that are being put on potential growth stocks, even if they're not making money, are crazy. There's been hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of these SPACs created. They've all been created with piles of money in them to go out and buy companies and do this reverse listing. When lots of money chases not enough deals, valuations go higher. And I think in this environment, a lot of these big e-coms from around Southeast Asia, which have been private for a very long time, are going to achieve the valuations that they weren't expecting even a year ago before COVID-19. And that gives the chance for a very nice exit for many of the early stage investors. So I think a lot of this comes down to SPAC mania, if you like, pushing valuations to levels that these companies just can't say no to.
Right. And, you know, the interest in SPACs or SPACs, however you call them, it has coincided with a lot of market liquidity and a lot of an uptick in market exuberance of some sorts. There is a warning, though, that we could see markets start to come down sooner rather than later. We don't know when exactly that might be. But if we start to see markets sort of come down from their recent highs, could we also see interest in SPACs come down and thus also perhaps introduce some more volatility to some of these companies that are looking at this vehicle as a way of listing?
Look, absolutely. And I've often said that these distortions are happening because we're living in a 0% world. Interest rates are at 0%. You get 0% for your money saved in the bank. There's trillions and trillions of dollars of liquidity all running around the world looking for some sort of sensible return. And that is why we have seen this asset price inflation sweep the world. We saw much the same thing after the global financial crisis when central banks cut rates and flooded the system with liquidity as well. I do get nervous when everybody is running for the exit door at once, i.e., say, your e-coms in Southeast Asia, they're all looking at listing. Or the other way of looking at it is when you see lots and lots of overseas money chasing these deals at very, very rich valuations, that's usually making me a bit nervous that we might be in, you know, nearer to a peak than previously. So, I mean, as far as actually investing in these SPACs when they actually come to market, you may want to tread a little carefully. And if US interest rates or US yields spike up substantially, I think that may take a lot of the heat out of the equity market rally.
Do you think a rise in US REITs, though, in US rates, though, might also take the steam or the wind out of the sales of, say, cryptos, which have also risen in those recent times? We also have, Jeff, a recent commentary from Peter Thiel, who's the founder of PayPal, that he does think that while he's very pro-Bitcoin, he thinks that this could actually be a weaponized as a financial weapon by Chinese markets. How do you make, what is the outlook for crypto, given the fact that it's being highlighted as a potential political weapon by some of even the biggest crypto proponents, and whether or not we might see their bubble burst by rising rates?
It's a little hard to say there. What I would suggest is that we're going to see some fairly chunky volatility if the volatility wasn't already vigorous enough in cryptocurrencies. I think what Mr. Thiel's referring to there is that if cryptos take over day-to-day transactions in economies, then governments and central banks effectively lose control of either fiscal policy and monetary policy. It gets outsourced to a digital yuan over in Beijing and such like. And in that respect, he probably has some valid points. But my thoughts are is that no matter how exuberant these or how crazy these cryptos get, there's no way that governments around the world are going to allow cryptos to take over control of financial, fiscal and monetary policy within national borders. It'll get to a point where regulations are going to happen. So I suspect at some stage we are going to see some quite vigorous regulation, particularly if cryptos do actually become, as they like to call it, much more mainstream, and it starts undermining the abilities of governments and central banks to manage their own economies. As far as bubbles go, it's really hard to say. You know, rather than trying to pick the top in these markets, I prefer to wait until they lose momentum, and when that downside momentum is clearly established, then you know, then you can look to maybe exit them or go short them. Trying to pick a top right now is a pretty dangerous business. And Bitcoin could be 45,000 tomorrow. It could be 75,000 by the end of the week. You know, it's potential to lose money whether you're long or short in it with volatility like that.
Absolutely. Jeff Haley, Senior Market Analyst for Owanda, thank you so much for joining us today on Money FM 89.3. As always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these uncertain times. And we look forward to next time we can have you back on the show. Meanwhile, happy Monday and happy rest of the week ahead, sir.
And to you. Thanks very much for having me on.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.